primary ways. One being he's opposed it through persecution, and the other, he's opposed it through heresy or false teaching, false teachers, wolves in sheep's clothing who've entered the church. And so, especially in the early church, these were things that that I think Satan sort of orchestrated, but that almost like the pressure inside the earth puts pressure on coal to make diamonds, the Lord used these things to make the church what it needed to be and what it is, and help the church to understand a lot of things through this, these sort of two pressures of persecution and then also of heresy. And so when we talk about different guys, a lot of them are going to be important. They're going to be famous through a couple different things. And one of them is going to be a lot of them were persecuted. And the second one is going to be a lot of them opposed heresy. They defended orthodoxy or right teaching against false teaching. And just as we get into it, a few words about persecution. We'll talk about persecution sporadically, but it's easy to get the idea that in the early church, it was just all persecution. But that's not the case. It's easy to kind of think about it that way. But just to try to be historically accurate, persecution throughout Christian history, but especially in the early church, has been sort of rare and it's been sporadic and rare. So it wasn't really an organized attempt to root out the church that lasted a long time, but it would come in and it would kind of pop up and it would be real intense, and then it would go back down. And that's the way persecution happened. But in the church, it became a really important factor in how the church understood itself. Because just think about it. Even if we weren't being persecuted all the time, just it did happen often enough that you at least knew of somebody who had been persecuted. So just imagine in our church, if 30 years ago, somebody in this body had been taken out, flogged, beaten, and killed. Do you think that would have a substantial effect on you? I mean, sure, it would just be one person, right? And there's a lot of people that have come and gone, but the effect of that would be really dramatic. And it was on the early church. The effect of seeing these things happen really helped form the spirituality and the self-understanding of the church. But then with heresy, there were a lot of different heresies that continued to arise. And just to kind of get a grasp on what heresy is, one author says that ideas achieve the status of heresies because they're thought by the church to be wrong rather than right teaching or doctrine. So just something that's a significant wrong teaching that sort of the church collective, that not just the Baptist church, but the Methodist church and the Presbyterian church and the that we all say, no, that's wrong. That's not Christianity. It's not just something that we kind of disagree about. That's something different. And so it's got to be something that's kind of come up inside the church, but that represents a fundamentally wrong teaching. That's what heresy is. And so a heretic is someone who kind of comes up from within the church and tries to teach this wrong teaching. And most heresies, you can kind of trace them back to one false teacher. Just one guy, a wolf in sheep's clothing, has entered in somewhere, started teaching this stuff. People kind of liked what he was saying, and then it spread. The one heresy that we're going to talk about tonight is a little different in that we can't really trace it back to just one person. So tonight we're going to talk about Gnosticism. Have you guys heard of Gnosticism? Kind of a popular. What are some other heresies that have maybe you hear about occasionally? Anything? Gnosticism is actually one that has been brought back to the mainstream lately. Some of the books, if you go in the bookstores, you'll see a lot of books that are like Jesus-ish, but they're actually having to do with Gnostic things like, and sometimes there are even books that sound like biblical books, like the Gospel of Thomas. You guys ever heard anything like that? Like the Gospel of Thomas? These are later books that are really Gnostic. They're not biblical. They're not Christian. They're Gnostic, but they're similar. And so We'll talk about this heresy tonight, and then we'll talk about one person in particular who kind of arose up in defense of it. So Gnosticism isn't this sort of one unified movement that you can point back to, like some other heresies that we'll talk about. It was just a collection of these different religions that kind of popped up, and they all shared sort of a real similar belief system. And so the word gnosis that we get Gnosticism from, it comes from the word knowledge in the Greek. So gnosis, it just means knowledge. It's a religion of knowledge. And so the main point of Gnosticism, it centered on the idea that you were saved by learning some kind of secret truth. So you weren't saved by faith in Jesus. You were saved by coming to this spiritual understanding of something that was kind of like beyond what everybody else got to know. So you were kind of special. You got to believe and know this certain thing, and that's how you were saved. And so just some of the things that Gnosticism kind of held to, some of the tenets that I'll go over real quick. The first was that I just mentioned was salvation was not by faith, but by secret knowledge. Secondly, they believed in one supreme God who was silent and never communicated until Jesus. So what that means is that the God of the Old Testament is not the supreme being. And then they believed in a whole variety of other lesser gods. And so it's helpful to think of it like a pyramid where you've got this one supreme God, and then you've got all these lesser gods, and you've got, they're called, it's really, sounds like something out of some kind of nerdy game or book or something, but aeons, these are sort of the good, smaller gods, aeons, and then at the bottom of the pyramid, you have sort of these smaller evil gods called archons. And so they don't believe just in one God. They believe in sort of one supreme God, and then they believe in these smaller other lesser gods. They also believe that Jesus and the Christ were two different people or two different entities. So Christ was this spiritual kind of maybe one of these aeons, one of these lesser gods, this sort of spiritual thing. And Jesus was the body that he came into. And so they actually believe that at the cross, right before the cross, when the Gospels talk about Simon, the Cyrene, toting the cross, what they actually think happened is that Jesus, or Christ, and Simon kind of trade places. And the Christ went into Simon's body, and Simon's soul went into Jesus' body, and it was actually Simon that died on the cross. So that's what they believe about that. And in their system, that just it makes sense, because they have this dualism between matter and the spiritual. So they think that anything created is bad, excuse me, and anything that's spiritual is good. And so that's how that makes sense to them. They also believed that the universe was created by an inferior and ignorant power. So one of these dark gods actually created the universe. And what that means is that for humans, our souls are essentially some kind of divine spark that was up there within the Pleroma, in the God realm. And now we're trapped here on Earth in this material body, which is bad. And so in their worship, it was very mystical, because you're trying to get out of this material body. This is bad, and you're trying to get to just the mystical spiritual realm. And so they would revolt against the material world. So that's some of the teachings of Gnosticism. And they denied that the Old Testament was actually the revelation of God. The Old Testament was written by one of these evil lesser gods, not the true God. And so the supreme being didn't reveal himself until Jesus. So, and Jesus came to dispel the errors of the Old Testament. So they didn't believe any of that. One of the key things that makes it a heresy is that there's no dependence on Jesus. One famous historical scholar observed that the content of the Gnostic gospel was an attempt to rouse the soul from its sleepwalking condition and to make it aware of the high destiny to which it was called. So the focus was not on what Jesus did, but it was on his sayings and trying to get to some deeper spiritual meaning underneath his sayings. The way this kind of worked out ethically or in their daily life was that they didn't like the material. So some people said, well, if my body doesn't matter, if nothing matters that's actually of material substance, then I'm going to do one of two things. Some of them, they became totally gluttonous and sexually licentious. So if the body doesn't matter, I'm going to just eat, drink, and be merry. I'm going to do all these things that would be unhealthy for me, unhelpful for me, and not good for my body. And then others, because they didn't like matter, they really became ascetics. They wanted to try to just sort of kill their body. So they would not eat, they would do all these things to like punish their body because their body was bad and their soul was good. And so this was a key way that it kind of worked out in their life. And so you, as Christians, we should have a very balanced understanding of the body. We understand that our bodies are created good, as we read, that God created everything and said that it was good. And our bodies are good, and so we should take care of them. And we can enjoy things, but we shouldn't exploit them. And so there was no balance like this in Gnosticism. Well, the Orthodox, or the Christians, saw this as a problem. It began spreading, and they responded to it. So one thing, of course, they tried to do was just rid these kind of teachers out of churches. So they tried to figure out who these Gnostic teachers were and disapprove of them, get them out of the churches. But they also sort of mounted a theological defense. They wanted to show why this could not be truly Christianity. And so one theologian, his name was Irenaeus of Lyon, which is in modern-day France. He lived from about 138 to 202. So we're talking about, 100 years after Jesus is about when he was born, roughly. And he wrote a book called Against Heresies. And in this, he used Scripture to define the parameters of what can be considered the Christian religion. And so just a few things from this. In response to this Gnostic understanding of many gods, he emphasized that there's only one God. He says, He is Father, He is God, He the Founder, He the Maker, He the Creator, He it is whom the law proclaims, whom the prophets preach, whom Christ reveals, whom the apostles make known to us, and in whom the church believes. So he wanted to emphasize that God is one, and then also that Jesus is in consistency with the Old Testament, that he's fulfilling the Old Testament. He's not some new thing on the block that's making all that go away. And then he also writes against the idea that Christ didn't really die. Says, and he did not speak of any other cross, but of the suffering which he should himself first undergo and his disciples afterward. So he emphasizes that, no, Jesus really did die on the cross. One of the things about Gnosticism is that it was the cool thing to do. So Christianity was not going to get you to sort of higher social standing. But Gnosticism, it was kind of the cool thing. It was all the rage, as these young people say now. Irenaeus understood that. He knew that part of the draw was that it would make you more just higher status in society. And so he writes, it is better and more profitable to belong to the simple and unlettered class and by means of love attain a nearness to God. So there are several implications just to draw from it. But one is that sometimes there are people who want to take Christianity and do some things that sound like Christianity, but actually that are a lot more accessible to the world. And so they say, no, you can get the best of both worlds. You can be you can keep some of your Christian stuff, but then you can also be acceptable to society. And ultimately that doesn't work. That's a failed project. But then also, just be aware that Gnosticism is still around. And so, I don't know, my grandmother watches Oprah, so if some of you gals do, don't take it too much of offense with it. But a good place to find Gnosticism is on the Oprah book list. So if you remember Anybody remembers The Secret that came out a few years ago? It was a book called The Secret that was really popular that she really pushed. If you read much about it, it's essentially Gnosticism. And so that still springs up in various forms today. Any questions about Gnosticism or about heresy in general? Nothing? Mr. Wiley, you look like you just got a question. All right. Well, does everybody have a prayer guide? Anything to add or any updates? Speaking of my grandmother, I made this list and forgot to put it on here. She had back surgery today, so from what I can tell, everything went fine. But her name is Sally Law. She's just going to be recovering in the hospital for a few days and then kind of Law, L-A-W. She's down in Birmingham, had back surgery, and hopefully we'll be back at it before long. The Wellses are traveling to New England as we speak, or maybe they've kind of paused, but Loredan has arrived in New England, and Chris and his mom stopped by last night, and so they stayed with us last night and got to visit with him just for a minute and then sent him off early this morning, and he should be in New York by now, so you can pray for them as they're traveling, and Lord Don's kind of up there by herself for probably until tomorrow, so that'd be kind of stressful. That's when it's going to happen, yeah. No, that's when, so he just, they think he's going to be fine, but they just are double checking, so they're going to remove a lymph node. So we can just pray that there's nothing interesting with that lymph node. So Megan's having a baby next week. Anything else? work. She has 4 stents put in her heart, and it's now 13% of it is working. Ken, will you pray for... Actually, I'm going to start... I think I started in the back last time. Brother Wally, will you pray for the Lovett's adoption and the Wells as they're traveling? Miss Betty, will you pray for Beulah May and for Lula and Miss Mills? Jenny, will you pray for Terry Bentley, Gary Cook, and Sandra Richardson? Donnie, will you pray for Duncan Cole, Brent Henderson, and Joe Chamberlain? Miss Pat, will you pray for Lucille Thompson, Pam Workman, and Dolores Tennell? Will you pray for Seth Carter, and then Virgil, Alan's friend, and then my grandmother Sally? Miss Maple, will you pray for Lori Hendricks and for Megan? Bob, will you pray for David Waters? And Alan, will you pray for Denny Hendricks, both just for his rotary cuff and that the Lord would use this injury somehow to bring him to a knowledge of himself? Miss Brenda, will you close us just by praying for the persecuted Christians in Iraq and other places? Also, we have a new IMB president. So the International Mission Board, they announced a new president today. It's David Platt, who is a pretty popular pastor, speaker, mission supporter. And so I think it's a good choice. But Seth, will you actually close us by praying for David Platt as he takes over the IMB?